Let me tell you of the days of high adventure.
What's up, everybody? I'm John.
And I'm Kevin.
And this is 6 Degrees of Schwarzenegger, the podcast where we take a long, hard look at some of our favorite action movies from the era. You know who we're talking about.
Schwarzenegger is the icon of the genre, and we're taking a deep dive into some of these 80s and 90s cult action movies and breaking them all the way down.
Good journey, everybody, and welcome back to the podcast. Hey, what's up, Kevin?
Hi, John.
How are you, buddy?
I'm doing great.
Kyle, welcome back.
Thank you, sir.
We're so glad to have you.
Welcome to our listeners on the Last of the Action Heroes podcast network.
Yes, indeed.
If you're listening to us there, it's great. If you're listening to us on our own feed, go check out the podcast network. They have offerings on Dolph Lundgren movies like this one. They have a couple of Stallone podcasts going on over there. There's a Bruce Willis podcast. Bigger. Where there's a Willis, there's a way.
It's man, it's so good.
Do they have I Must Break This?
Yes.
Oh,
that's, yeah.
That's a great show.
That
yeah, I've listened to a few episodes.
There you
that.
Go.
Awesome.
And there's been some talk. I don't know that it's going to happen, so I might ask it out. They want to do a Kurt Russell podcast called The Kurt Locker.
Incredible.
That's I like it for the name alone. I'm in. I don't want to talk about Tombstone.
Talk about Tombstone, talk about Bert, want to talk about Overboard, talk about Captain Ron.
No, you want to get into I believe it. Tequila Sunrise.
I believe in Jesus. So, yeah, I love Kurt Russell. He's a national treasure. Someone asked me recently, we were playing some game, and one of the questions was like, name someone who's like the ideal marriage. And I was like, Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn. Immediately. I was like, awesome. Not even hesitating.
There was a recent Twitter thing that is, if you had to be trapped on a desert island populated with entirely characters played by one actor, who would it be? Kurt Russell would be a decent choice. Like all the Kurt Russell characters are like residing on the island.
Except for the bad guy in
Nick Cage could be fun. Fever dream.
What were you about to say?
In Guardians 2.
Oh, well, I was thinking Tarantino movie.
Stuntman Mike.
Yeah, that would not be great. Anyway, we're not here to talk about Kurt Russell. We're here to talk about something much worse,
yeah.
And that is Masters of the Universe.
I want to talk about, before we get to the plot, what are you guys' like personal history with this movie?
Mine?
Both of you.
I remember seeing it in the theater. It wasn't like one of the first movies I remember seeing, but it was
okay.
Like I was a huge action figure fan, had all of the He-Man action figures. Literally, I have a list somewhere amongst all of my things here, but I mean, it's like literally dozens of action figures and Castle Grayskull and Snake Mountain, like
yeah.
Everything. I just was like He-Man, Thundercats, Ninja Turtles, G.I. Joe, Transformers. It was like,
all
those were
shit.
My fucking
yeah.
jam. And so I remember when this movie came out, just, it wouldn't have mattered. It could have been 10 times worse than what canon did. And I still would have probably loved it.
Yeah.
So it's nothing but fond memories. And even when I watch it now, for all of its flaws, again, like
oh, yeah.
for what we said, it's like it's eminently watchable and a lot of fun for me.
Yeah, it was the first movie I ever saw in the theater. I think, when did it come out? 1987.
Summer of 87, I think.
I was 4.
Oh, wow.
But,
that's awesome.
But my uncle, Paul, who was a big nerd, he took me to see it. And I brought my He-Man action figures with me. I had He-Man and I had Faker. I think it's Faker. It's the blue one with the recording device.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. He's like the robot He-Man and with like orange hair and stuff. And like, I remember the guy at the ticket counter was like, whoa, this guy's ready for He-Man.
Yeah, absolutely.
That is young to even have a memory. So it really stuck with you.
I can't believe it stuck with me as long as it has.
It's awesome.
I saw it in the theater and it was, what's funny is that came out the same summer as Superman 4, The Quest for Peace.
Yeah.
And
the
I
canon
think
double
classic.
The canon double dip.
And I don't think I saw that in the theater. I think I saw that on video right afterwards or whenever it was on TV and almost immediately afterwards.
Yeah.
And they both have the thing that it stuck with me most about these movies are physical impairments that happen to people in the movies.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that, but yes, I have all the He-Man figures, and my favorite one of all, was the one who was like the mosquito guy. You press a button and all the blood comes down.
Yeah.
Remember that guy?
Yeah.
He was one of Hordak
from She-Ra.
Yes.
And that was another thing, like, well, maybe we'll get into some He-Man lore later, but that was another thing from my YouTube deep dive, is that, like, Hordak was in the Legends universe of He-Man. Like, Hordak was, like, Skeletor's mentor, his master. Yeah.
Was he the main villain in the She-Ra?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hordak
yeah.
was the okay. main villain in She-Ra. So.
So I didn't see this movie until 2021.
Wow.
I love that.
I know.
So
it should have been right up my alley, but it was, I don't think my parents were taking me to see movies that weren't like full on kid movies in the theater right. at that age. It was like a lot of what Land Before Time and American Tail or whatever, you know, shit like that. Now dad at home, one of my first memories in my life was dad letting me watch Conan the Barbarian on TBS or whatever, and being like, don't tell your mom I let you watch this.
Oh, Steve.
You know, because that's like, on. Even the TBS version had to still be pretty damn violent.
Yeah.
And orgies and stuff going on in it or whatever. But yeah, I didn't. So I was a He-Man fan. I mean, I had maybe not as many toys as you guys had, but I had Battle Cat and He-Man. And I think I had the Castle Grayskull and some of the others too. And I loved the cartoon, but like, yeah, I don't. It's not as burned into my brain as much as maybe like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and G.I. Joe or
going back and watching some of the animation, like some of the animation reminds me a lot of like the Bakshi Lord of the Rings movie.
Yeah.
Like not the stuff that was like where they, you know, superimposed it over live action and stuff, but like the just the straight up animation stuff reminded me a lot of that style. That
it was fun, not the same animation company, was it? Filmation or whatever it was?
No, right? I mean, Bakshi had his own company and he did a lot of like rotoscoping. You know, like drawing over like actual film actors. But yeah, Filmation unfortunately is like kind of a cheap fly by night kind of company.
Well, their shit looked a lot better than that, like New Adventures of He-Man, the one that is like He-Man in space.
He-Man
or like Skeletor was kind of cross eyed and whatever in there. Yeah. I don't know, but man, who looked more metal than Skeletor, dude, with like just yoked up.
Yeah,
and his like skull the hood and skull, dude. He was badass.
Well, yeah, if you ever Google Earl Norum, the artist who did a lot of paintings of He-Man.
Did he do the early comics, the Mattel comics
or
anything?
No, that's like, some of those are drawn by Bruce Timm, who did like the Batman the Animated Series.
That's amazing.
Stuff.
Okay. Yeah,
there were a lot of cool.
And that version of Skeletor from those comics looked even cooler than the Filmation version.
But Earl Norm, I'm telling you, the best He-Man paintings you can find. They look like something like Frank Frazetta Conan stuff. It's
very
amazing.
Cool.
It's rad. So in the last episode, we have our good guys have like all come together now. The Earthlings and the Eternians are on the same page. They're trying to stop the bad guys from taking over Eternia, led by Skeletor. Skeletor's got Evil-Lyn. The mercenaries led by Karg are on Earth. They're trying to get that cosmic key away from Gwildor because Skeletor wants both of them.
Yeah, he can't just
do his thing with just the one, even though he's about to become, you know, all powerful in the universe or whatever.
We guess.
So he sent them back to get the cosmic key and to bring He-Man back alive. And I mean, that's almost it. They've got him. They've got him pinned down in the music store, and Charlie's music store is about to be a big old battle.
About to break loose.
Yeah. Okay, so now the baddies have set up a perimeter outside of Charlie's. They come crashing right through that showroom window.
Yep.
He-Man and Duncan, Man-at-Arms, are doing a pretty good job of holding them at bay, to be honest. Like, they seem to be winning.
Yeah.
Dolph Lundgren sucks at looking like he knows how to handle a gun.
He just is not good in this movie.
Well, he's trained under Stallone. I don't know. Set
why
of
is
Rocky
He-Man
IV.
Using a gun in the first place? I mean,
what's he supposed to be doing? Just laying waste with the sword?
With sword, with, yeah.
With, like to deflect blaster shots.
He's also supposed to be super fucking strong, which we only see like a couple of feats of strength in this whole movie. But like, He-Man should be like plowing through these guys.
Okay, That's the He-Man we want to see.
Yeah.
Instead of him just awkwardly wielding a blaster.
He's supposed to be super strong. Like, he's supposed to be able to, like, punch a boulder and the boulder explodes and shit. Yeah, like
he's
that.
Like Kyle said earlier, he's like Thor.
Yeah.
He's a god.
Exactly. He's at least a demi one, a half guy.
In the back room, Kevin is watching as Gwildor is, like, just pressing buttons on the cosmic key. Teela wants to know how long until the portal's open. Gwildor doesn't know. He said he'd give all the chocolatite in Frobillion if he could just have two units with a master sound maker. The fuck?
Did you get all that? Chocolatite and Frobillion?
Chocolatite is definitely something for the kids.
Right.
Like, oh, kids, it sounds like chocolate. So yeah, they know that it must be something good. Yeah.
So am I supposed to assume that Gwildor is tone deaf? He can't actually.
He seems like he's doing calculations, right? Yeah. Like to try to figure out what like the tone is. He doesn't come natural to him,
so
I guess.
Does music just not exist for anybody but on Eternia?
Didn't it have the coordinates to get back programmed in? But
that's what he said.
They want to like beam right into the sorceress's like
right
behind the force field or some shit.
Which is like, I feel like if they all beam in, they crush the poor sorceress and kill her. But anyway,
it'd be crowded in there. So the stormtroopers are starting to get the upper hand in the shootout
because He-Man sucks.
He-Man and Duncan, they've been like wisecracking also throughout the battle, which is weird. I guess they're like supposed to have you get the feeling that this is not their first time being in war together or whatever. But Duncan takes out a grenade and tosses it.
It looks like a Nazi grenade. Yeah, dude. It's straight up.
That potato masher grenade that the Nazis used to use.
Leftover prop from a war movie, I'm certain.
For sure. The store at this point is just getting destroyed.
It hurts to think about it. It hurts to think about any instrument like coming to needless harm.
So Teela wants to go out and help. She just tosses Lubick's pistol to Kevin. Tells him to guard the key with his life.
Okay, bye.
Kevin has been... Why did Kevin... He's been, like, useless from the start.
Yeah.
She's like, you. You're the one.
I just met you. Hold this gun.
And he's not even been, like, willingly going along with this.
No.
At any rate, she comes out blasting and starts, like, to level off the playing field a little more. She makes that pretty good joke, the woman at arms joke.
Breaks the fourth wall, looks right at the camera. It's a very like I am no man moment.
It's a good moment though.
I like
for her.
She's great. Like she's also one of the highlights of the movie. Yeah. She and Tolkien like kick ass in this movie.
So now in the back room, Lubick's just immediately trying to get the gun away from Kevin. Like trying to grab it from him. You know, Kevin is eluding him. He's trying to explain to him this is like whatever's going on is for real. They've got to help these guys get home. Lubick says, you know, you're all going to jail. You're all going to jail when this is over.
What are you
going to
charge us with? What's he going to charge them with?
Yeah, it's not. As the debate, rages on, Julie spots a vision of her mother out in the alley gesturing for her to come out here. She's like, come on, Julie, you're better than this.
Yeah, right.
You know, like can't be real. Something's got to be going on
with everything
here.
That's happening. Yeah. Anyway. Fuck
so it. Kevin and Lubick, they start like physically wrestling for the gun. This is the ideal time for Julie to ditch Kevin. So she sneaks out that unlocked, unguarded back door.
No soldiers at the back
door. No soldiers back there.
God.
It's a weird attack plan that the bad guys had.
If you were under 18 and you lost your parents, though, and you had all this other crazy shit happening around, I might believe the fact that my mom was suddenly back
alive. She wants to believe it,
That's the one thing I buy.
But wouldn't she, if that had happened to me, I would have immediately been like, Kevin, come look at this.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was she not? No, she went out and then came back and said
Ghost,
that shit.
Ghost mom told her, like, shh, don't tell anyone I'm out here.
Sure,
like, it was very untoward.
Yeah, I'm wondering, though, why are the bad guys not just coming through that back door in force? You know? But anyway, Julie is, like, mystified at how is my mom out there. So, I like that the fake mom didn't... She was just silent until Julie was like, Mom? And she's like, yes, honey.
She calls her like, mother. Mother?
Mother, she said.
like psychopaths.
It's like Mike Pence addressing his wife.
Mother?
Norman Bates.
Yeah, so... I like the moment that it seemed like maybe the Evelyn wasn't really sure what to say until...
Totally.
Let me let Julie break the silence here.
Totally.
So... mom says that, you know, we had to fake that plane crash because of the secret work that we're doing.
What?
Just
the
fucking
fuck?
Weird.
What the actual
dude?
Shit. Like, that's the okay. And, but how could
Julie would have some knowledge of what they did, unless it's like a True Lies situation.
That's I mean, it's like my parents were spies.
I guess so.
Okay.
She says basically, you know, that's why we had to disappear. She's like so gullible at this point. Maybe she's ready to believe anything.
She's got PTSD big time.
There's like a big emotional embrace out there in the alley. Oh, Mom tells her that, you know, her new friends are connected to the top secret work they're doing, and we need you to go get that cosmic key and bring it to me.
You know that shiny metal thing with the blinking lights?
Yeah, that's it. Okay. That's the one. Julie ought to be a little more skeptical, I think. Yeah, this is just, but as we said, she's traumatized and a minor.
When I was four, though. I was like, oh no,
she's going to give him the key. You as a 4 year old, you knew that this was a trap.
Yeah.
You are believing that this was mom.
Well, it's like, yeah, everything about the scene, sort of like it's off.
It's eerie. Yeah, the lighting and stuff. Weird. Yeah. So now inside Lubick and Kevin, they're still fighting for control of the gun.
They've been rolling around on the floor for 10 minutes.
Yeah. The gun falls to the ground. Charlie dives in. They're like, all the wrestling continues. Charlie was probably, that was a smart move, actually. Like, I don't want to jump in here and get shot.
Yeah, totally.
Whatever. But Gwildor picks up the gun and fires a warning shot.
Motherfucker, stop. I'm busy over here.
He tells them to chill out and let me work, basically. Him wielding that gun is something else, though. Yeah. Seeing him hold the snub nose.
Billy Barty is a treasure in this movie.
It's at that moment that Kevin notices that Julie's not there anymore. And it's at that moment that Julie busts in tears, telling Kevin that her parents are alive.
Huh?
Then she just grabs the cosmic key and runs out of there. I like to think if Gwildor had just blown her away in that moment. Like,
shot her to death?
No! Waste her.
Oh, man, that would have been intense, but kind of.
I got to save the universe, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Kevin goes after her, but the door's being like held closed by some type of magic, or maybe it was really
it was, like,
hot.
Fused or something. Yeah. Like
it was
hurt his hand or something.
It was definitely like a red glow to it. I don't know what's supposed to have been happening there. I didn't know that Evelyn had magic per se, but I guess she was always like an evil sort of sorceress or something.
Yeah. Like anti-sorceress.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So Julie hands over the cosmic key to her mother, who, you know, immediately transforms back into Evelyn. The least shocking reveal ever. Julie lets out a great like terror scream.
Yeah. Courtney Cox was great.
Uh-huh. So Evelyn walks away. At that moment, the spell on the door goes away, I guess. And Kevin comes running out, runs to Julie. I think that's the first moment that I sort of thought like, oh, I think we're supposed to think like Kevin's
a good
hero.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, he's doing the heroic thing or whatever, but he doesn't have hero vibes.
No.
About him. He's just like been sort of doing the bare minimum
in his life.
You hating on illusions? They killed it at Club Zero last night.
I've been in worse name bands, though, to be honest.
Yeah, totally. What are some of yours?
Oh, God.
What do you play?
I play bass.
Nice. Yeah. That's badass.
Yeah.
Do you still noodle with it some?
No,
do you have one?
Yeah, I still have all my gear, but I haven't played it in like
two
years.
Dude, we should jam. Oh, let's nerd out.
I would get
What were your bands called?
I was in a band called Overwhelmed. Which is on Spotify, if you ever look at it.
Oh, nice.
That was recorded like in 2006. That's how long we're talking. And then, or 2005, actually. And I was in a band called Niagara Mohawk, which was named after the power company in New York, I think.
That's awesome.
That's a cool name, though.
Yeah. They were both pretty decent bands, but.
What kind of music do you guys play?
Oh, man. I think the best sort of description of Overwhelmed was like sort of Smashing Pumpkins-esque,
cool.
I think.
Yeah,
that's the easiest, I think, descriptor. And the other one, I don't know, man. It was sort of like, it was kind of like early 90s emo, sort of.
Okay. You were into like, I know you were into My Bloody Valentine and all that kind of shoegazing stuff, right? Was it like that?
Yeah.
Shoegaze.
I would say that like... both bands pulled a lot from that kind of stuff. Like the biggest influence on Overwhelmed was the old 90s band Hum.
I think Hummer was another. That was a Smashing Pumpkins song.
There were
two
shoegazy space rock bands that we really liked.
Okay.
And the other band, God, man, I don't know. I'm trying to think like of the bands that they even sounds like. Maybe like Sunny Day Real Estate, sort of.
Okay.
Something like that.
Tell Kyle about Lady Parts. One of his projects.
I call him Bandrew when I refer to him to some people, but he's been a guest on this show many times. And he and I back in Houston had an act where we would just play like 80s and 90s girl covers.
Oh, nice.
So we put like Britney Spears and Shania Twain and like the Bangles and like very anything. Cool. But it was like it has to be from 1980 to 1999. And yeah, we had a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. It was just the two of us in a like a drum machine and keyboard guitars.
I like it. Yeah, I love the premise.
It was a lot of fun. But now there's a show called We Are Lady Parts about like
that?
Some Muslim girls that are like in a rock band or something.
Oh.
That I need to check out and also sue for copyright infringement.
Get your lawyer on the phone.
Exactly.
I'll take us back to Masters of the Universe
Heman?
Now.
Sorry.
No. This is what we love. I like being absolutely on the tangents. Back at in whatever town they're supposed to be in, any town USA,
exactly somewhere deep in California.
What is that Disney? What's Disney World's like little town? The American town, you know, it had a name, right?
Something Frontierland? No,
It was called something USA. It was like I don't think it was any town USA, but it was something like that. So back in the movie, all the baddies are starting to fall back. Gwildor tells He-Man that the key was taken, you know, points him off in the right direction. There's a little mini shootout
in the
alley. These dudes are like our true stormtroopers.
Why didn't they just keep them pinned down?
I don't know. I mean, I will say He-Man was not even taking cover.
Right.
He just ducked in the middle of the alley and they couldn't hit him. Yeah, I don't know.
Get small.
Yeah, that would have been your time. You got him now in a kill box or whatever.
You could just
take him out. Anyway, who was it? Julie says the woman took the key. Like, that's one way of putting it.
Right.
Another way would be I gave her the key.
She tricked me.
I was fooled. So He-Man and the others, they chase after Evil Lynn and the Cosmic Key. Back inside the music shop, Lubick's asking Charlie if he keeps a gun in the store.
Charlie's like, of course, this is America.
So you retrieve a shotgun from under the counter. Lubick racks that thing. That's one. That's the first time he racked it. So he's chambered a shell now. He's ready to pull that trigger and shoot.
That thing's made of plastic, right?
Yeah.
Was it? I thought it looked...
It was very shiny for a shotgun.
Maybe it's just... Well,
I don't know. Everything else in that movie looked very heavy and real.
Yeah.
I don't know either.
It never occurred
it
to me
It sounded
to,
real, but also sound
Foley
effects.
That's Foley.
So who knows?
Yeah. So who knows? Now, Charlie is dumbfounded by how fucked up his story is.
Yeah, I feel bad for Charlie.
I really did. That's his whole, like, his life's investment. I hope he had insurance. But then what do you even tell the insurance company? I guess you just say it got vandalized.
Yeah,
I don't know what happened.
Exactly. Yeah. It was vandalized.
Now, Lubick runs out into the street, racks the shotgun again, which would eject then a shell that hadn't been spent yet, tells the group of stormtroopers to freeze. That you can't see Tolkien with the pump action shotgun without thinking to like, eat lad slackers.
Yeah.
Right. That's me. I wanted him to say that. It would have been so cool.
It would have been awesome.
Actually, that movie hadn't come out yet at this time.
No, but it would have been cool if they'd gone back to the future. Also, it did seem that Charlie gave Lubick any additional ammunition. So he's got
plenty of shells.
Okay.
I guess. I don't know. Whatever. The troopers, they turn around blast and they blow up this sweet muscle car.
That car is awesome.
I in my mind, that could only have been Charlie's car.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like there could have been a good gag where Charlie's like, not my car.
Everything.
But they, like, maybe they didn't have time to film that because it just seemed like that had to be Charlie's car and like his life.
My
is just...
store. My car.
So the baddies have all regrouped now. Evelyn says they're ready to transport. She's going to signal Skeletor using the cosmic key.
How does she know how to do that when fucking Gwildor don't?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it was we'll just activate it when we're ready for you to send the rest of the army. But how does he couldn't know if it was the good guys or the bad guys activating unless there's a way to send like a text message or something with the thing.
No one knows. None of it
I
makes
don't know.
Sense.
It's fine, though.
The finer points of cosmic key use are lost on us.
So. As He-Man and the rest, they continue chasing after, a huge portal opens right in the middle of the street.
It's a door! A big door!
Gwildor. That's like your impressions for this movie are on point.
Thanks.
It's because a lot of years of watching it.
I know. I'm a loser.
No, man. I mean, there's movies I've seen 100 times, probably.
A big door!
So, the good guys, they run down an alley to hide. as a huge army starts marching through the portal. They're followed by these soldiers on like flying hoverboard shit going on. Skeletor's like piloting some type of a command ship.
And it looks like that thing's like its sole purpose is a flying throne for Skeletor.
Right.
It's kind of rad.
It just is like motherfucker's a sitting duck in that thing.
It reminded me a little bit of Jabba's whatever he had.
Yeah, it definitely looked like the sail
Tatooine.
Barge.
Yeah. Sail barge. Nice.
Yeah.
So Skeletor calls Evil-Lyn on the radio, which I didn't know they had radios either, but it's like it's all good, whatever. Evil-Lyn says she's got the key. The humans are weak and easily fooled and controlled. I think she's probably right about that.
Yeah,
actually, it was what we've seen over the past like decades. but Skeletor interrupts her to ask about He-Man.
Enough of that bullshit. Where's He-Man?
Yeah, he's obsessed.
Yeah.
She confesses that He-Man had escaped. Skeletor sends his hoverboard goons, which they're called the Air Centurions.
That's
after
pretty cool.
He-Man, yeah. Those effects are so bad.
Horrible.
Yeah.
Absolutely
They're
awful.
Like motionless little action figure, like miniatures, I guess.
Well, yeah, it's either that or it's photos, still photos taken.
Yeah.
And it's someone like crouching.
They just never move.
Yeah.
It's
even worse when old Dolph gets on one.
Oh yeah, dude, I was going to say, like, we ain't seen nothing yet about how bad it's going to get.
Yeah. It's just the tip of the iceberg.
So there was this kind of cool, like, vertigo shot in the alley. I don't know if you guys noticed. It was like, I've never seen a crane pull out vertigo shot where it was like, you know, the alley sort of seemed to stretch out as they were running down and whatever. It was a pretty dope shot for our boy Goddard. I got to give him some love where I can.
I know. Yeah.
You know, so as the Air Centurions attack, a He-Man blasts one who just explodes.
Right.
Which would have been like almost the only time in the movie that you get the impression that it's a robot and not a human in armor or whatever.
It's almost like a producer note with finally took at some
Make
point.
Make one explode.
Oh, they are robots. Okay.
Yeah, totally. You can't say they're not robots.
Yeah,
you can't prove that. But the good guys, they bust down the door into whatever, a staircase, I guess, in the alley. They're taking shelter inside. He-Man grabs Gwildor's grapple gun. Tells him to get everyone to the roof. He hands off he gives his cape to Gwildor for some reason.
Fuck.
I don't know.
Yeah.
He took the time to remove the cape. He-Man
it's
sort
probably
of.
Probably because they couldn't have it on whatever motionless.
Oh, yeah. It wouldn't look good on the effects.
On the hoverboard.
Exactly. They couldn't make it blow in the wind or whatever.
Thank God someone had that note.
Yeah. That would have been shitty just for the still cape hanging
God
on him.
Damn. Ugh.
Yeah. That's a good call, man. So He-Man, he blasts one of these Centurions out the window or through the window and he knocks him off his hoverboard. He jumps on that thing.
It's weird that they slowed that shot down as much as they did him, like jumping out the window onto the hoverboard. Like it's He-Man coming out a broken window. It's not like it's not anything impressive.
For this movie, I guess, was it Dolph doing the stunt himself?
You only see him sort of lunge,
feet, right?
You see him lunge and then you see the feet land and that's
okay.
It. So I'm like, why slow the shot down?
I don't know.
I don't get it. Anyway.
We got to get the runtime up. Slow it down.
Maybe.
We talked about on Over the Top, like that had all those arm wrestling scenes play out in real time instead of slow-mo, the movie would have been like 20 minutes shorter. And it was already like 86 minutes or something.
It was
long.
Cooking.
Yeah,
it was cooking.
Another canon trick, I guess.
I love it, man. It's weird. Yeah, I don't know how. It makes me wonder how the hoverboard works. Like, if you're a robot, I can see how maybe you're like wired into it or there's some connection, but then it just seems to do whatever He-Man wants it to do.
Yeah.
Which is maybe it's like a segue where you shift your weight around.
Yeah.
That's what I assumed.
Me too.
But I was so distracted by how fucking awful he looked on it.
It looked. Yeah. It's hard to watch Dolph on the thing, him acting on it.
Oh, when you mean the shots that are live Dolph when he's like just standing on the roof of a truck or something.
It looks like,
Styles.
It looks like he's uncomfortable at how fast whatever he's on is going. It's like it's going too fast, and he's like he looks scared. He's like
he's got like the wind in his eyes, probably too. Yeah, those shots as you mentioned, they're just the worst.
It's the worst looking thing in the movie.
It's a clearly like a little miniature figure. Like it's not to scale. He's got like an overly oversized head, kind of. I don't know. They could have used just a He-Man toy and it would have at least been funny or something. This has just looked weird.
That would have been awesome.
Yeah.
Dude, I was watching that, The Toys That Made Us on He-Man again recently. And the dude who sculpted like the original prototype of He-Man said that they had had some like some whoever, some physicist or something like sort of look at the thing and said if he is 6 foot one and had the proportions of the action figure, that he would have weighed like 700 pounds or something.
Imagine the cardiovascular health like of that
thick,
guy.
Fucking
too,
thick
man.
Boy. He was just huge. Imagine that your legs probably weighs 150 pounds or something.
Like Scott Steiner, one of the Steiner brothers.
Yeah. Fucking,
those big pile of pump.
Those guys are incredible. Now, Evil-Lyn and her minions, they're returning to their ship with the key when He-Man attacks from the air. And he's a crack shot all of a sudden because he is mowing dudes down from the moving like hoverboard thing.
Okay. That's what I want to see. He-Man shooting more guys.
Boo.
Robots. Right. I don't care about murdering. It's not the murdering.
You want to see him wield that sword?
Yeah, I want to see him cut heads off.
Be epic, man. Be epic.
I don't. How is all this chaos not drawing a crowd in the town? Like, it's not that late, I don't think. It hasn't been. It's got to be before midnight.
Yeah. I don't know.
Anyway, he uses that grapple gun that he got. He snatches the key away from Evil-Lyn and zooms off. It's like everyone just loosely carries the key. Like it's a loaf of bread or something, you know, like they don't want to crush it. Like they just are just loosely carrying it. Skeletor and his army are marching down Main Street now.
It's like a fucking parade.
Yeah. Yeah, where I see this and I was like, where are the people?
Why isn't Lubick called in some like reinforcements?
Yeah. Dude, no, it's taking everything's just it's convenient for the plot.
Yeah.
They were shooting in a real town, I read, where they would like shut it down from midnight to 6 a.m. Sure. each day to shoot.
I mean, it looks like downtown Marietta.
Yeah, it does.
They were in Whittier, California, wherever Whittier is.
Okay. Does it even exist anymore? Because I read that it was like a town that was like going through some hardship or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
At the time, and that like
I think it got a ton of earthquake damage in like the big 89 earthquake.
Really?
Maybe like they said, a lot of those storefronts that were there sort of crumbled, all the brick,
yeah,
and stuff. But yeah, it's just like there's a lot of commotion going on in town for there to not be anyone around,
right?
So another Centurion appears, and he's going head to head with He-Man, like some Top Gun shit. Holy shit, we're head to head. I can't believe we're doing
because I was inverted. Bullshit. We get that moment here in a second.
The He-Man gets shot in the shoulder. He drops his blaster, much to Kyle's delight.
Hurrah!
Then the Centurion can't hit anything. He's just blasting away, missing.
We can all agree that that's like He-Man's a big fucking target.
Yeah.
I don't. Well, okay.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So He-Man does like a loop on his.
This is because I was inverted. Stupid shot of him upside down.
Yeah, I'll just fly. Yes. It's
but
amazing.
At least he gets him with the sword.
Yes. He swoops around and hits him with the sword and the Centurion explodes. Now Evil-Lyn, Karg and the Beast Man are leading Skeletor's processional. So I feel like there's a missing scene where they were reunited because you know. Skeletor would have been pissed. All of a sudden she's here and she doesn't have the key anymore.
Right.
Like, so there was something that axed out here.
Yeah.
He-Man is chasing after another Centurion. Skeletor commands that guy to lead him back to us. Meanwhile, Duncan and Gwildor, they're working to locate the key / He-Man. Teela says He-Man should have returned by then. They're up on the roof of a building in town.
Yeah.
Duncan says he's not worried about He-Man, more so that the bad guys are going to find us where we're hiding here. And as he's saying this, wouldn't you know it, Skeletor's command ship is like rising into view in the background. It's a pretty effective moment.
I like
though.
That shot.
Sure.
Yeah.
It was like, it's nice as a viewer. You get that.
I do feel like Goddard's got good vision in certain.
He
like,
has some good ideas. I feel like he just didn't have a lot of like good, you know, he didn't have the best people surrounding him. No. He didn't surround himself with the best people.
Yeah.
I think the core story of this movie is good. I don't think it's a good He-Man story.
Agreed.
But I think it does like have like sort of a general stranger in a strange land kind of thing.
Yeah, sure.
That,
totally.
That also works in like the Thor movie. For
yeah,
me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's there. It's just, it's not what you wanted when you're like six. And
you want to see all
He-Man.
That Eternia shit. Yeah. You want to see him riding Battle Cat around.
Yeah, exactly.
You want to see what Gorko was his name?
Orko.
I'm sorry, guys.
No. But it was like we should shout out Kevin Smith and be like, I'm very excited to see your new series, sir.
Yeah, I think it's a good time. It's a good timing for us to be doing this podcast.
Yeah,
it ties in nicely.
It's even gonna have He-Man's son in it, Hero.
Oh, I didn't know he had a kid. Who's the mom? Yeah. Is it not Tila?
Orko.
Shit. I don't know. You could say it was She-Ra, and I would believe you. I know She-Ra's his cousin or something.
It's his sister.
Sister, whatever. I clearly don't remember anything. But yes, Hero is in it. And I think he's his son, though sometimes in canon, he's also his ancestor. So
interesting.
I watched the trailer today and I was very intrigued by it.
It looks cool.
Yeah. I hope it doesn't disappoint. So back in film world,
mm-hmm.
Gwildor is saying he's almost got the sequence ready to transport them back to Eternia. He says, once he has the key, we're going to be gone within 2 pretons.
Got it.
Fucking meaningless.
Another new term.
Yeah, is fucking insane to me. We hear a voice. I think not Gwildor.
Ooh. And who is it?
Tila and Dungan start blasting. It's Skeletor. The Skeletor is like protecting himself with the force field, fucking like Darth Vader style.
Right.
Now they're all of a sudden they're surrounded by stormtroopers. Skeletor tells them to drop the guns or die. So they disarm. Dungan dropped his shit real quick.
Yeah.
Like there was zero hesitation.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he knows what's up. Yep.
I guess.
He hasn't
lived this long
by being reckless.
I guess so. So Skeletor starts scolding Gwildor, telling him he had big plans for our partnership. Fucking what? Gwildor says I'll never serve the Lord of Snake Mountain.
It's like an honorific. Skeletor is like the Viscount of Snake Mountain. It's his ancestral home.
Yes, absolutely. Gwildor is showing more heart than Dungan. That's what I felt
time.
Like.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not going to go quietly.
As you said, Gwildor is the star of the movie.
This movie is about Gwildor.
So Gwildor says when He-Man arrives, you know, Skeletor, you're going to be in trouble. Skeletor says he's expecting He-Man any moment now. And he has his stormtrooper seize them all. Now, He-Man flies right into Skeletor's trap.
Wouldn't you know?
Julie runs to try to warn He-Man, but a blast of lightning from Skeletor wrecks He-Man's hoverboard and like deflects, I guess, and hits Julie in the leg.
Yeah, I love she like full on Admiral Akbar. It's a trap.
Well, Skeletor has Sith powers, basically.
Yeah,
it seems.
He does.
Poison, lightning, electricity powers.
I like it. It's gold. You can't say we ripped it off because it's gold, not blue. Mm-hmm.
It was gold. It was purple in the version I saw.
Was it purple?
Oh, it's purple.
No, it's gold.
It's gold later.
It's gold later. Yeah.
Yeah. It's gold after he becomes what we think is a master of the universe.
I thought they touched up the lightning at some
point. No, I'm sure I'm backwards. I'm going to trust you guys.
Oh, it's all good. It doesn't matter what color his lightning is.
It was in blue. So it's fully original. That sequence was a mess.
Yeah.
There's just little snippets of film. I think because they had no effects budget or they had blown through their whole budget or whatever it happened. I don't know. It's a good question because this was like the most expensive movie canon had ever done.
Bad and Superman 4. They did them back to back.
I don't understand. I would love to see the line item, and I know it's fudged, but I would love to know what they spent them. Was it on renting the town?
Production was 5 months long on this. That is long for any movie, much less this movie in this era, but I think it was because it was night shoots.
Mm. Yeah.
So they had these like limited number of hours that they had access to the town. Like he said, basically we had it from 9 until 6 a.m., but it would take 3 hours to set up and we had to break down everything every single day because we couldn't just leave our cables in the streets and stuff like that. And so it would take us until midnight or 1 a.m. to shoot the first frame for the day.
God damn.
It's like, this is fucking, why didn't you do this shit on soundstage or on the back lot?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know.
I don't either.
But it was just a fucking, it was a money pit of a movie, apparently. So He-Man, he's dropped the cosmic key in the crash.
Uh-huh.
Skeletor like zaps it with his lightning. And so now he's got the only working key.
Right.
He-Man pops up. He starts just whipping ass. This is what we've been waiting for
movie. This is some of the only real feat of strength type fighting we see from him the whole time.
He's throwing dudes around and like doing that thing where everyone piles on you and then you go like, rah! And you fling everybody off.
We love it.
So Tila and Dungan, they get back in the fight now too. They're quickly subdued. Skeletor is cackling in delight, which I love a happy Skeletor.
Yeah.
Skeletor orders He-Man to stop fighting or he's going to kill the other good guys. So He-Man goes along with that. Now, Skeletor tells him he'll spare the other guys' lives if you become my slave, or I'll just kill everyone right now.
So, or perish with him on this primitive, tasteless planet.
Nicely done.
It's like, where does he get tasteless from? Like, he's been here for
10 minutes.
Judging Kevin and Julie very hard.
He's not wrong, I don't think, necessarily, but it's just it was an unnecessary burn.
Right.
But you know, that's where Skeletor gets his jollies from. So He-Man throws down his sword. That's the line. I can't let innocent people die.
That is when my partner walked out of the room laughing.
That was a bridge too far. Yes. Like, this isn't enough.
I love that. Like Teela's like, no,
let him kill us. I guess. I don't know. But I fight to the death is noble.
I'm a huge fan of Skeletor's hilarious condescension. Well said, He-Man. How noble.
Like, it's great.
So good.
I wonder why Frank decided to make Skeletor sort of vaguely like English.
I think it's, if I don't know, the same reason like in Star Wars
an affectation.
Yeah,
just
all the bad guys are English.
There was some piece of trivia I read somewhere about this movie that he wanted to have a Skeletor be shirtless. He wanted a sexy Skeletor.
He wanted to go like the cartoon version where you like big muscular Skeletor.
I don't think he cared about the cartoon. I think he just wanted the character to be sexy because, you know, he was sexy Dracula, right? Right. When he was in that 70s Dracula movie. One of the first dates my parents ever went on, by the way.
Very cool.
He apparently lobbied for that and everyone shot him down. So
damn rough.
He did, I think, have a good deal of creative control. It seemed like input, like he wrote a lot of the Skeletor lines. Yeah. The stuff that's well written and feels out of place.
Yeah.
I think was a lot of Frank Langella's contributions.
I'm just imagining him like saying these lines live though, without the overdubs, and how terrible it must sound to that makeup.
Through all that shit.
Oh yeah, good call.
The false teeth and everything.
Yeah.
Now, so they're taking He-Man captive. He tells Duncan and Teela to look after the others. The stormtrooper basically asks Skeletor, like, what are we going to do with these guys? And Skeletor says to leave them alone.
Do you love how like hysterical and excited Blade is when he holds up the sword of Grayskull? He's like, yay!
I got it! He does. He enjoys it, especially a moment that's coming up
so
later
dorky,
as well.
So dorky.
Yes. He's so been funny. Geeking out. He's probably wanted to. He's like got a Blade fetish.
I wanted to hold this forever.
So, but Skeletor gives the orders like, we're going to leave him alone. Basically saying, if we hold up our end of the bargain, then He-Man, because he's so like an honorable person, he's honor bound to keep his promise and be my slave. We're saying like, I want you to be my slave. It's like such a childish sort of thing as well. Like, totally. If I do this for you, you have to be my slave.
Again, speaking to the 4-year olds in the
audience. Oh, yeah, dude. No doubt. There's something all Shakespearean, isn't there, also in the performance that Skeletor's giving here?
Yeah, definitely.
He's the finest actor in the entire cast.
No, I mean,
there's amazing. 100%.
He's tenfold probably better than
the
next best.
He's the one that's
still
working, you know?
Yeah. I wonder who's the second best actor. To me, Tolkien maybe is the second best.
Tolkien and Teela.
Even though he's a one-note guy.
And Billy Bardi.
The note is good. Yeah, Bardi is good. Bardi's good. So all the baddies, they take off. Duncan goes to inspect Julie's injured leg. Teela tells Gwildor, you know, to fix that damaged key so we can get back to Eternia. Gwildor tells him that the power core is melted. I guess that's something you can tell from looking at the outside. So the sequence that he'd programmed in to get them back home has been lost.
There's no way home. No way.
He's good work, man, from Bardi under all that shit.
Oh, he's so good.
They're all very dejected, you know. Meanwhile, Skeletor's army, they've gone back through the portal to Eternia. That portal has just been open, or maybe Skeletor reopened it. Who knows? So Kevin says that Julie's burning up. They wrap her up in He-Man's cape. Mm-hmm. You could play a game with this movie, like of just trying to keep track of where He-Man's cape is in any moment, because she was wearing it earlier after the junkyard sequence.
True.
He had her wrapped up in it. So they take her down from the roof. They want to get some water or try to render some first aid or whatever. The streets are starting to fill up with police. The other cops that are there, they're skeptical of Lubick's story about this mystical space battle.
I'm telling you.
Shouldn't there be destruction everywhere?
Yeah.
Like wrecked robots and
cars,
destroyed buildings, like fire.
Yeah.
I mean, we know for a fact that the music store is just a war zone.
Yeah.
Like the car got blown up out
like,
the street.
Air Centurions that exploded. Yeah. All kinds of stuff had been blowing up.
It's bizarre. So. Where were they until this moment? Yeah. I don't know why it took so long for more police to come, but they should have all been probably over at the high school still.
Yeah, they were still investigating
arson and vandalism.
I mean, it's got to be a small town with very few police.
But, yeah, that's true.
Still. But I feel like it's sort of like the town in fucking First Blood. You see the explosion. It's right over there. Run down the street.
Yeah, you can hear it. Like, you can hear this shit
there.
Happening.
It's just right there. Go see.
Okay, so Duncan, he's trying to do some first aid on Julie's leg, which is nasty effects.
It was the grossest thing I'd ever seen as a little kid.
Yeah, it's, even now, like, I looked at it and I was like, ugh.
That is not for kids. Yeah. Like, looking at that, that's just pretty nasty. Kevin wants to know what's going to happen to her. Tila says that the poison's already in her system. The wound's just going to continue to grow. Bummer.
Nice.
I guess she's going to become one big pulsating, like, nasty thing. I don't know. Duncan says that only the sorceress can heal her now.
Convenient.
Very. So Kevin says there's got to be a way to get that key working again and get us back to Eternia. Gwildor says if he got the key working, then he could open a portal. But
that's easy, is it?
I mean, okay. You punch any couple of buttons, I get. I don't know. But he says that the precise sequence of tones to get them back to Eternia was lost, and they could search for 1,000 years. Not pretons or chromons or anything, but years, and they never would find the sequence again.
Okay, here's the one area in which I call bullshit on this.
Hit it.
I mean, he's heard this before many, right. many times.
We're talking Gwildor?
Yeah.
He could at least, yeah, he could
noodle
with it.
He might be tone deaf.
Man.
I guess, but...
I guess I just don't understand what that's like.
Can go, na, 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 na. It's not a hard melody, brother.
No! It is fairly simple,
yeah.
Right?
Na, dee, 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 dee.
That Tears for Fears.
One, dun, five,
dun, 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 dun.
This is my four-leaf clover.
Na, 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 na,
amazing song.
Oh, it's
amazing song.
Now, Kevin asks if that means are you just talking about the melody that played from the thing when you're programming it? He's like, yeah. And Kevin's like, I can remember that. So he starts like trying to recall it. He complains that there's this nearby speaker.
I actually love this bit where it's like Conti's epic score has been swelling in the background, and then Kevin's like, shut that shit off, and they blast the speaker
yeah.
and it stops.
It like transitioned in sort of a tinny like Muzak version of it.
I'm like, that's good.
It's clever.
I like that.
The visual effect is awful. Because
yeah,
the speaker it just disappears. There's no explosion. There's
sparks.
Explosion sound, but the speaker just vanishes.
Yeah. Now, once it's gone, Kevin, it comes back to him pretty quick. He explains that if he hears a tune a couple times, he can memorize it. Says he's actually planning to steal it for one of his songs. He said, asshole. That's how perfect pitch works.
I mean, even
you can maybe remember it's like whatever.
But Gwildor's like,
that
oh,
hard.
Yeah.
That's
it's like, yeah, that's it. That, how'd you do that? It's like,
why didn't you
only,
tell me you're a songmaker?
Only five notes, Gwildor.
Why didn't you tell me you were a songmaker? Are you a master?
Yes, you are.
I know that. What? That's just like wild optimism.
Yeah.
From Gwildor. I dig it. That's like the power of positive thinking shit. So Gwildor implores Kevin to pluck that final chord out of thin air as only a master songmaker can. Kevin assures them that he's nothing special. I'm just a keyboard player in a garage band. Is that where you said the high school band
stupid keyboard
line?
Player in a high school garage band.
Mm-hmm.
But then maybe the best line, my favorite line in the whole movie. Only one of you, Kevin. Only one of anybody.
Which is true.
I love that.
As far as
it
goes.
Oh, what a big message.
That was like that end of the cartoon message for the kids,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Only one of any of us.
Which is true enough. So that was that heartfelt shit, though, for the kids.
Yeah, it was good.
For the children. So Duncan tells them, you know, we've got half a chromon or else all is lost. Which should mean many hours if it half a chromon. But we're definitely getting down to the final minutes. So saying, like, let's just give it a shot. Like, what's the downside?
There is
pretons are out the window now. As well, it's just we're back on chromons, whatever. Tila asks Gwildor, can you get this key functioning or not? Gwildor lists out the components he needs.
This is the best and worst part of the whole movie.
I need a bosonic tesseract.
Okay.
I need an octode rectifier and something to generate the tones. Like, as luck would have it, they just have all that shit on them.
Awesome.
Tila's got the fucking Tesseract Velcroed to her arm.
Yeah, I've got that right here.
Lol.
Duncan like pulls one out of his hip pocket or some shit from underneath his armor. It's just, there's a big fucking eye roll to me from this moment.
Agreed.
It's
like, what this is like, let's get this in game rolling, man.
It's one of the hokiest like Deus Ex Machinas I can recall any movie. It's like, it's borderline comedy.
I keep a Bosonic Tesseract Velcroed to my shoulder.
Yeah. Why didn't you say so earlier? I've got one on me.
All day, every day.
Yeah. Anyway, so there's hope.
Well, I think that Kevin like runs into the burning, demolished Charlie's Music Store.
Oh, yeah. He's going to go back and got to get one of those keyboards, a remaining keyboard.
Man.
He's going to loot the store, if you think about it.
Where's Charlie?
I don't know. He's probably somewhere crying, dude. He's
calling his insurance company.
Sweeping together the remains of his life.
His empire's crumbled. I think that'll wrap us up for this episode.
Oh, man. Our lead into the exciting conclusion. That's awesome.
Yeah, dude. This has been the penultimate episode.
Hey!
do you think you'll say the catchphrase this time?
I want it. So. We got to have it, man.
Yeah, definitely. We'll be able to leave here in a minute.
So we hope you'll be back next week, and we'll take you the rest of the way home.
All right, boys and girls, good journey.
Good journey.
Good journey.
And we'll be back.